Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, for everybody who endured inclement weather yesterday to join us for our annual golf outing. We at Mistwood in Romeoville, by the way, we do appreciate it. Mistwood staff, as always, was great. Did the best they could with all the rain the course has taken on. But we were one of the few groups, I think. That got the all 18, and my group did.
Oh, your group did?
Yeah.
We got 16 holes in.
Right, 16 is not 18.
No, it's not. But I saw you out there defying death, standing near power lines, you and your foursome, just la-di-da with an umbrella up, like, come and get me, God.
No,
I'm ready.
I have a one iron.
Oh, that's...
Not even God can have a one
and
iron.
And I'll tweet that out because, you know, that's... should probably avoid power lines
did
when
you
there's
see,
lightning.
Did you see the... after the rain cleared for, like, the third time, there was a rainbow that came out over the course, proving once again that God is a conservative.
Dan's softer side.
Yeah. AM 560 golf outing, and
with
you
a
have
rainbow.
A rainbow.
I mean,
and God, you know, he makes us go through some trials and tribulations, much like life. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, that was the music that accompanied that rainbow. Sort of wild.
Was there a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow?
No, but it was great to vent. And for those of you who didn't come out, well, we don't like you anymore.
No, and I want to thank my foursome, Integrated Health Solutions, Miriam McParland. She and her two sons, and then their friend TJ, who plays for the Colorado Avalanche. Or Avalanche.
Avalanche? Is that a French team?
Is it? No, the Avalanche. And he was telling me all about hockey because I really don't understand hockey. So,
oh, that's cool.
Isn't that, yeah, he was a really, really cool guy, real humble.
How many?
Normal kid.
How many White Claws did she have?
The woman I was with?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, she's fine. She was fine. She was just, you know what? It was her day off.
No, I'm not.
She was relaxed.
I'm saying because
somebody else was driving and she was fine.
I like a White Claw.
Oh, she, yeah.
I made fun of White Claws and High Noons and all those other things.
No, she was drinking High Noons.
Well, it's the same difference. Truly White Claw.
No, I think High Noon has 2.5. Well, I had learned all about it, Dan. If you're trying to diet, you should have the High Noons.
I'm not trying to diet. I just like it on the course. If you're going to have a drink, it's not as heavy as beer. And
I
like the White Claw now.
I don't drink in golf.
I'm man enough to admit that I like the White Claw.
Yeah, no, I saw you with some High Noons. You had the Black Cherry. Is that your favorite flavor?
Because
there's lime. There's other things. I saw them all yesterday.
I like Black Cherry, and I like Mango because that used to be my dancing name.
Oh, Mango?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played with our friend Patrick Cotter and company from Dwight, the Dwight Mafia.
Yeah, One-Eyed Mike.
One-Eyed Mike as well, who's a legend. He haunts the 16th fairway at Dwight Country Club. So if you ever go to Dwight Country Club, there's a guy named One-Eyed Mike who, according to legend, just wanders the 16th fairway looking for his eye.
So his eye, tell everybody what happened.
It's a ghost story.
He was teeing off and...
No,
he wasn't. Not? Okay. No. This is why you should tell the story.
Right, exactly. I know it. So fence, chain link fence that guards another hole that runs, that abuts the 16th fairway. He's hitting a second shot. He's behind the chain link fence that protects this other tee box. He fires a liner, hits the fence post, ricochets back directly, and just explodes his eye. How's that for a 5 a.m. story?
But he's great about it.
He was playing by himself.
Oh. Uh-oh.
So he's like, oh, this isn't good. So he put a towel over his eye. He drove himself into the clubhouse. Fortunately, there was an off-duty cop there who got him to a hospital. And now he's got a Sammy Davis Jr., although it's not glass.
It's not. Like it's porcelain. I thought it was.
Yeah, so it's some sort
of. But whatever it is, it's durable because he drinks out of it.
Yeah.
If you guys want to vomit real early in the morning, he'll pour a little Miller Lite in there.
Yeah.
And then just like shot.
And then he
shot eye.
And he haunts the fairways at Dwight Country Club. So that was a good time, and I guess we're gonna announce later this morning who won, because I guess, you know, it was a little bit of chaos, people coming at different times. We had tee times, it wasn't a shotgun, and so, you know, I don't know if my team won again, which is
well, I know our foursome, we definitely got the woman's longest drive, and I had and held up until the last minute the longest, straightest drive in some. Guy from Signature Bank beat me by an inch. I'm going to call Bull Jive.
Mm. Yeah.
How convenient for you to just bump it up a few more centimeters.
You're all about the individual accolades. I'm a team player.
Oh.
I'm interested in the team game.
Okay, so how far, how many under were you guys?
Oh, we're 13.
Oh, we were 14.
Yeah, right. Please. And that was without the handicap or the benefit of the long drive guy on the 16th hole.
We never saw him.
Right, he was gone. But normally, the $60 hole, you do the whole, like, oh, you pay him $20 that goes to Hunter Club of Chicago, and he hits long drive, and you get to play it, and you get an automatic three.
We didn't have him. We didn't have the luxury of him because the storm chased him away.
Yeah, but you're not in the running.
In the running.
Oh, really? How many under were you?
I'm telling you, I think I was not in charge of the score because I don't like to do math any time after 9 a.m. I think we were 14 under.
I don't think you were.
I was playing with a professional athlete. He was amazing. And I know it's a hockey, doesn't translate into golf, but these guys were athletic. They were in their 20s.
Unless he individually was 14 under. He shot a 58. Okay, there's no way they used five
of my drives. And they did?
Well, I thought you just said these guys were professional athletes and they were amazing were just a bystander.
They picked up the putting and the short game. Short game, as you know,
these amazing athletes couldn't get off the tee, but they were great around the greens.
No, they got off the tee, but sometimes they shanked it to the right or to the left. I'm down the middle. We had great advantages. We had great advantages with the women's tees, and then on the par threes, we got on the green. Miriam and I did.
Here's the
problem. Ask them; they'll tell you.
Here, there's one problem with this apocryphal story you're telling.
It's just five drives. Yes.
Yeah.
Out of 18.
You started out by saying you only played 16 holes.
Okay, well then they used five of my drives.
I'm sorry, if you only played 16 holes, you're disqualified from the event because you have to play 18 holes because that's how golf works. So now that you're out of the running, we could go back to finishing my story a long way around to knock you out of the box once again. My goodness.
So you're 14 under and you think you're the winner. So we're going to
13 under, and we played 60. If I could finish going back to 16, so I don't have to save it for this week in golf with Dan Proft on Friday. 16th fairway, we played straight up, we birdied, but normally, you know, it's one of those gimmicks for an outing, which raises money for Hunter Club, so it's fine. But you get the eagle if you use the long drive guide, so that we actually gave a shot back to the course.
Oh,
and to the field that was allowed to play with the long drive guide when it was still dry out.
Stand-up citizen. You're my hero.
I'm just telling you.
I'm going to have a parade for you.
Our group was golf purists. Golf purists. We're not cutting corners. Yeah.
Standing under power lines.
Well,
these are the mother of all power lines. This is like nothing to scoff at.
Well, if the power lines are far away from us, so if the lightning hits the power lines, it won't hit us. So it's a nice cover.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
By the way, Justin, Dan and I got you a engagement gift. It's coming in the mail. You want to tell him what it is?
No.
Why?
Don't worry. It's not your wedding gift. We'll get you something, you know, useful as opposed to Amy's gag gifts.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So that nightclub shooting, Trilogy Nightclub in St. Charles on Sunday. On arrest made yesterday, 22-year-old Aurora man facing first-degree murder charges, aggravated murder charges, aggravated battery charges. Bail set at $3 million. Oh, bail. Is that back?
Did it ever leave?
The guy who was killed, guy who was murdered, this Khalif McAllister, 23 years old, from DeKalb. When you have turnstile justice and you allow repeat predators to walk among the civilized, you put the civilized at risk, even if the predator isn't praying at the moment. Khalif McAllister. Long arrest record. In July 2017, he was arrested and charged with possession of marijuana. In August 2017, the next month, he was charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm, $1,000 bail. On August 7th of 2017, a month after that, he was arrested and released under home surveillance for discharging a firearm in mob action, $5,000 bail then. Did not show up for his court appearances after that. Less than 3 weeks later, the end of October, this is from July of 17 of to October of 17, I'm talking about, he was again charged, this time for attempted murder, armed violence, and aggravated discharge of a firearm, later released on $5,000 bond again.
This happens every day in Chicago.
Court cases stretched out over the course of years and allowed McAllister to remain free on bail despite repeated arrests. After one of the shootings, he fled to Georgia but was still released on bail. In fact, last year, 2020, he was arrested for DUI, and he was able to make bail on that instead of being locked up despite pending cases.
Do they not see his prior arrests when they let him out, especially for a DUI?
Obviously, this should all come up. Right. The records are integrated. And earlier this year, McAllister received a $20,000 PPP loan. PPP loans. Here we go.
Well, people are getting money while they're in jail. It's ridiculous.
It's also against the strictures of the PPP program, Paycheck Protection Program. Any owners with 20% or more equity in the company must be listed on the application and will have their background checked for any criminal activity. Oh. A business will be immediately ineligible if any listed owners are currently incarcerated, on probation, on parole, or have any current fraud-related formal criminal charges. If a business owner or part owner has a prior criminal record which is unrelated to fraud, your business is still eligible to apply. But again, it says a prior criminal record unrelated to fraud, but background check for any criminal history, ineligible if incarcerated, on probation, on parole, or have any current fraud-related charges. So I guess technically maybe he falls through the cracks on the PPP program. But $20,000 PPP loan from Itria Ventures, LLC. The loan does not list the company for McAllister or what business he was involved in. That company, Itria Ventures, has been accused of predatory behavior during the COVID pandemic. This story is so interesting because it's the victim in the case, not the predator, but what do we, not the murderer, alleged murderer, but what do we know about these situations? The guy that rolled up on McAllister and opened fire wasn't random. This McAllister apparently was a repeat criminal. And I'm sure once they dig into this 22-year-old, we'll find out that this guy's name is Michael Carwell. I'm sure we'll find out that this isn't his first rodeo either.
No.
And so now think about that and say, Charles, and I don't know anything about this Trilogy nightclub, but I suspect it's for young people. And so your kid is out at this nightclub just because they want to go out and have a good time or whatever. Young people out at the nightclub. Everybody's done it in their youth. And you got these two knuckleheads, both the victim as well as obviously the murderer, putting everybody in harm's way. That's Does it start to get real then when it's a club in St. Charles and it's not just some burned out neighborhood on the west side or the south side of Chicago? Does it start to resonate now?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Especially since there have been so many mass shootings. They just walk up and indiscriminately start shooting.
It's not indiscriminate.
Well, they don't go up, the intended target is you, but they won't go up and just shoot you. They'll just start spraying bullets.
Well, yeah, right.
Well, that's a new thing for, it's what happened with two mass shootings on Sunday. 17 killed at one. Or not killed, shot.
The crime story in Chicago has always been a story for the suburbs. It's a story for the tourists. I don't know how to break it to you again. Probably tired of me repeating it. But the political ruling class in Chicago, including all of those preening aldermen representing the South and West Sides, has never cared, or at least not cared enough to see fit to do anything substantive about providing for the safety of residents in those neighborhoods. It's never been about the South and West Side. They don't care about the residents of Inglewood or South Shore.
Superintendent Brown says no. Now they care, and they've got a new plan for this.
I'm not interested in.
Do you want to hear
sawing sawdust? No, I don't. They're not interested in providing public safety for South Shore, for Inglewood, for the West and the South Sides. They're not interested. It's a story for the suburbs. Come to the city. It's a story for tourists. Come to the city. It's about the money from outside of the city. It's not about people who have no money inside of the city. Is that clear to everyone? Because I don't think it is. And you think you'd pick up on what the political ruling class in Chicago has been laying down for the past half century. And yet everybody wants to focus on this. The latest pronouncement from the fungible police superintendent. The latest moral indignation from the tiny mayor du jour. Who cares what they have to say? When you're focusing on that, you're missing what's going on. You're missing the scam they're running.
I'm just saying they're repeating what Jody Weiss did, and that's meeting with gangbangers. That's what they're going to do. They're going to go visit them door to door to try to quell the violence on 4th of July.
You covered Chicago for 20 years, Jody Weiss. Every tiny mayor and every police superintendent toady has done this. Not Jody Weiss. Every single one.
Sorry, Terry Hillard did it.
Every single one. And so, here we are in June of 2021, and now we're going to cover this story again and pretend this is something new or novel.
Oh, no, I'm just saying it's laughable that he thinks that this is new when you're looking at somebody like a reporter that's been there for 9 different police superintendents that has seen this. Canceling days off, putting more members, you know, in volatile areas, extra police patrols.
I go back to this PPP, this 20 grand.
Oh, yeah.
All the money sloshing around. And you think this the federal government has a handle on it and the incidence of fraud is going to be minuscule. We just did this story last week. What's the number? Somewhere between 250 and 400 billion of the $900 billion in COVID relief was hijacked by foreign cyber gangs and American street gangs here.
They were even taking helping themselves while they're in prison with their gangs.
Up to 50%, hundreds of billions of dollars. No, it's just a rounding error. They can print more. And it winds up in the hands of people like this guy who was murdered in St. Charles yesterday, this 5-time, 6-time loser, whatever he was. I'm sure he was an honor student. I'm sure, you know, he was about to turn his life around. He's living in DeKalb. By the way, DeKalb is a pit. Can I just say it? Around Northern Illinois. You want to send your kid to NIU? And by the way, both my parents went to NIU.
Well, it's not. It's NIU. It's Eastern. It's Western. It's our state schools have a problem.
This McAllister was residing in DeKalb. And the so this was a topic of conversation about what's the situation in DeKalb where a lot of students live. And we've had violence in DeKalb before. One poster, the lady working at the bar where I always sit in fine dining establishments said that she has lived in DeKalb for a while. She called it a ghetto. She said the area around the university had become infested with inner city kids, all got grants and easy admissions to attend the university, but often dropped out or were kicked out without graduating. Then instead of moving back to Chicago, they hung around DeKalb, mostly not working, going to school or anything at all. This McAllister, the victim in the St. Charles nightclub shooting, he lived in Lincoln Tower Apartments in DeKalb. You want to send your kid to NIU?
I know a family that went to visit that didn't even get off the bus. On the campus tour, like, nope, we're going to stay here. We're going to be just fine.
A related story, a recent survey done by the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. Amid sharply rising concerns about crime and quality of life, 44% of respondents to that survey say they want to leave the city in the next few years. 70% said the quality of life in San Francisco has worsened over the past few years. Just 7% thought the quality of life had improved. 60% said crime in the city has become much worse in recent years. I wonder what the numbers would be in Chicago if somebody did a similar survey, despite Lori Lightfoot trying to convince us that crime is down year over year, like things are really on the upswing in terms of public safety.
As you said yesterday, they cherry-picked data to pretend that we're all suckers, and we're not. 74 people shot over the weekend, 6 killed, by the way. New numbers in.
Tony and Roselle.
You know, you were talking about spillover. We've had spillover in Roselle. They've had kids come out, rent the house, have a party, invite more kids come, and then shootout. They rented rooms in Bloomingdale, had a party, having fun. The wrong crowd shows up, shootout. Wheaton and Lombard, home invasions. That one was people out on bail from jail from Cook County. I was on vacation in Wyoming, and whenever people heard you were from Chicago, oh my God, is it really that bad with the shootings? That's all they wanted to hear about.
Yep.
It's and depressing.
Ask, how could you live there? How could you let your children go to school there?
Yeah, you don't get the rat-tat-tat Al Capone anymore. You get the current.
Or you don't
chaos.
Get the Michael Jordan. You get the Al Capone, the Michael Jordan, now nothing. Now it's all, how do you do it? Are you okay? And tell me what's really going on. They want to know.
Cassandra in Ravenswood.
Where Illinois isn't run directly on the by organized crime, it is run on the organized criminal business model.
Yes.
We have been living through a gangland war for ever since they locked up El Chapo the first time and crime spiked. When they put him back in jail, after he escaped. When they put him back in jail, it spiked again. What we're seeing are this gang against that gang. We're seeing what happens in any corporate vacuum, whether it's criminal or supposedly legal, that these people are vying for control of fentanyl, human trafficking, drugs, guns, and nobody wants to admit this. And then you've got the police who actually have evidence and can make a case against a criminal, and the prosecutors and the judges set them free. If you lived in a neighborhood where the gangs were in control and you saw somebody get pistol whipped and you knew this person who did that was going to get out, would you actually talk? Would you be willing to testify? It's frightening what they're allowing to happen.
Thanks for the call, Cassandra. It is the mob economy. You've said that before. It is the organized crime model. I mean, think about it. They took the rackets away, gambling. They took, not completely, but trying to get into the drug market, obviously, right, with marijuana and sprinkling infield. The biggest racket of all is the public sector pension system. Of course it's a mob economy. Everything is extortion. Everything is protection. Everything is preying on their constituents. What do you think red light cameras and speed cameras are? For your safety?
No.
Bill and Glen Ellen.
Yeah, well, like you would say, Dan, we need to make the Democrats wear the jacket for this. 95% of all the gun crime in all of these cities is directly caused by Democrat policy. And until people start focusing on the Democrat Party and their responsibility for all of this, it's not going to change, because you know, it's not normal people going out and shooting each other on the street. It's the same guys who have been captured by the police over and over and over again for illegal guns, for using those illegal guns, and then they're put back on the street. We all know what the problem is. It's obviously Chicago people do not care. They don't care enough to vote out the people releasing these criminals with these revolving doors in these courthouses.
Well, right, when Kim Fox won, everybody died a little inside when that happened.
Thanks for the call. But yeah, Kim Fox is an effect, not a cause. It's people in Glen Ellen, too, though, Bill. I mean, you elect these Marxists in the suburbs, like in Glen Ellen and Naperville. I mean, who do you think they serve? I thought the people in the suburbs, the North Shore, they're so smart. DuPage County, the Western Burbs, so talented, so engaged, so enlightened, such good citizens, so forward-looking, so with it. They really know what's going on. Do you? Do they? Well, you elect Marxists that are roll call votes for these bosses. You can't put those dots together? You can't follow that logical thread? Apparently not. So don't just say it's Chicago people and Chicago people don't care. This entire state. Certainly north of I-80. Pete and Racine.
Good morning. Two quick points. The first one is when they keep calling these shootings mass shootings, they are not mass shootings. They are gang wars that are going on, and they should be reported that way. A mass shooting is when a guy's up in a motel, like I think it was in Texas, and he was shooting at a crowd. That's a mass shooting. And second, I think that the local authorities and this country needs to start putting ads on TV that tell them that the police officers carry a gun and they have authority for a reason. And if you point a gun at a police officer, you've made a decision that you possibly could get shot or killed, because that is their authority that they have to protect you, me, and all of us law-abiding citizens.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Let's see. It's going to be interesting to see how Eric Adams handles this in New York City, if he is confirmed as the mayor. He's been saying some things about, you know, trying to reclaim the progressive label and this and that. We don't want fancy, we don't want fancy candidates. We want blue collar people who do something. But he also he's a sort of a muddled mess because he's a cop trying to be a politician. I mean, even though he's a borough president, he's still sort of feeling his way around. America has betrayed the inner cities. The problem in America has never been assault rifles. That's an issue we've got to address because of the mass shootings. The real crisis has always been handguns. We've ignored, if you go to the south side of Chicago, Brownsville, Detroit, Atlanta, the shootings we're dealing with are handguns. We've ignored that because of the victims. The victims are black, brown, and immigrants. Yeah, well, so are the perpetrators. And handguns are just an instrumentality, right, Eric? Like I said, he's a bit confused. Mike on the north side.
Good morning. There's only one way to stop this, and we're going to use my brains and Dan's money to do it.
Is that right?
First, Dan, we need you to get a PPP loan.
Yeah.
And we're going to buy that building on Ashland Avenue in the Kennedy that they put all the murals on, and then we're going to make a Laurie-o-meter, like a Sean-o-meter, and we're going to keep track of the shootings and the killings. And all the shootings and murders of the kids, we're going to put it up there. And as the numbers change, the people are going to see it every day, and we're going to blame it all on Lori. It's going to be the Lori-o-meter, and we're going to put the picture of Beetlejuice up there, and she won't be able to get away from it. Mm-hmm. They'll be asking her about that every day.
Yeah.
And eventually, she'll either leave town or have a mental breakdown.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Sports and politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and intersection. Arrogance and ignorance, arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance. Intersection.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover on this installment, starting with football is gay. CTE is not going to end football, but ideology could. The NFL releasing a 30-second video. We don't have the audio because it's just words on a screen with the you know, music bed. Football is gay. Football is lesbian. Football is beautiful. Football is queer. Football is life. Football is transgender. Football is bisexual. Football is for everyone. Football is no longer. That was my addition at the end.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA. Then a quick comment. Football is lesbian? Men are lesbians, though?
Football is lesbian. Football is beautiful. Football is queer. Football is life. Football is transgender. Football is bisexual. Football is for everyone.
Football is desperately trying to fit in. Football is trying to be woke.
I'm proud of the clear message this spot sends to the NFL's LGBTQ plus fans. This game is unquestionably for you, said the NFL diversity director, Sam Rappaport.
Of course they have a diversity director.
Of course they have.
Of course. Why wouldn't... Do we have a diversity director here?
No.
I wonder if I could do two jobs in one.
Football is for degenerate gamblers, and that's about the only thing that's going to sustain it. The NFL. Football is lesbian. Football is beautiful. Football is queer. Football is life. Football is gay. You know, I had this idea the other day after seeing all this... Pride paraphernalia in downtown Elmhurst. Like
downtown Elmhurst.
There's on this coffee shop right across from the train station there. Mm-hmm. There's this black silhouette with like a rainbow flag painted on the building. There's that sort of the same thing here. This is one of the new hashtag campaigns. It's blank is for everyone. Football is for everyone. I see handmade signs in some of the businesses. Elmhurst is for everyone. Did anybody say it wasn't? Who are you arguing against? Can you point to somebody that said, "Hey, gay people can't live in Elmhurst"? Did somebody say that?
No.
Transgender people said. So who's making the argument to which you're responding? That's number one. Number two, I think it'd be interesting for businesses to just sort of provide the subtle pushback of putting up signs to say, "We serve conservatives." Or ooh. Conservatives are welcome here, too. Why? What's the ooh?
I went, ooh, because then there's going to be pushback, and then...
Because you're not supposed to serve conservatives?
No, you are supposed to serve conservatives. You're supposed to serve everyone.
Well, I just make the point that the group that is, you know, at the receiving end of all of this purging is conservatives... They say, everyone, we serve everyone, including even conservatives. We can maybe put that. We serve everyone, even conservatives.
There you go.
Elmhurst is for everyone, even conservatives.
That would be the sign of
because
up.
I want everybody to recognize that the marginalized population is anybody who disagrees with the neo-Jacobins, the new Marxists.
And who else is excited about July 1st? Few days away, because then we can celebrate America now. Enough with, you know, I feel like we've been just, this LGBTQ plus month has been crammed down our throats at every turn. That, you know, whatever. Can we get back to celebrating our country? Because we're not having fireworks celebrations anywhere at all in Chicago. And it's not what you think. It's because of police units. It's a safety issue if you have everyone go downtown to Navy Pier. That's what I've been told by many people. Because I tweeted out, like, what? When is America not cool? When can we celebrate? There's not one fireworks show in Chicago. Suburbs, yes.
It's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm. If it saves one life, Dan.
We've had safety issues in Chicago before, haven't we? Did we have fireworks?
Said no fireworks at Navy Pier for 4th of July, but there's going to be music and activities. And Bubba Gump Shrimp is open.
Yeah, I appreciate the, you know, the propaganda, but... We don't just accept what these authorities tell
us. No, but it's weird because the pier's hosting a fireworks show July 7th and Wednesdays and Saturdays until Labor Day weekend, but they're not going to have one, which they normally do on July 4th.
But it's a safety issue.
Because this is a deadly weekend, so they don't want to attract more people to one area in case there's indiscriminate shooting and gang shooting.
So, again, do you buy the line that they're telling you that you're dutifully repeating?
No, I'm being sarcastic. But I'm just, it would be 15-minute firework display, and we can't have that?
Football is lesbian. Football is beautiful. Football is queer. Football is life. Football is transgender. Football is bisexual. Will your kid play football? I mean, I know most aren't going to go to the NFL, but I suspect this culture will reach down into the collegiate levels, clearly. High schools. Look what else is going on in your high school. You think that sports are insulated? Obviously not. You see men playing women's sports. Grade school. You think they won't reach down with this, the way they reach down with the sexualization of children and the segregation of children by identity? But they won't reach down with this business in sports. You buy that? You going to pretend that you were real surprised when it comes? Like so many people have been surprised by all that has transpired, all that came from academia and now is visiting your kindergartners. As far as the 4th of July, I don't think Gwen Berry is going to be at your barbecue, Amy. Gwen Berry is, you've probably heard, is this U.S. Olympic track athlete. Yeah, she's a hammer thrower.
Hammer thrower, yes.
She's also a hammerhead. She took the occasion of the national anthem being played at a medal ceremony to turn away and hold up activist athlete T-shirt over her head to protest America's systemic racism. A pretty weak Tommy Smith, John Carlos impersonation, by the way, Gwen.
And the White House defended her for what
but
she
I know did. He's incredibly proud to be an American and has great respect for the anthem and all that it represents, especially for our men and women serving in uniform all around the world. He would also say, of course, that part of that pride in our country means recognizing there are moments where we are, as a country, haven't lived up to our highest ideals. And it means respecting the right of people granted to them in the Constitution to peacefully protest.
Yeah, thanks, Jen Psaki.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw is calling for Gwen Berry to be removed from the Olympic team. What if she wins the gold medal in the hammer throw and she does that in Tokyo? Disrespects our country on a world level.
The IOC announced they will not allow kneeling or other forms of protest at the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Athletes will not be allowed to participate in protests or demonstrations on the field of play, during an official ceremony, or at the podium. And those who do will be punished, according to the IOC.
Well, if we know she's going to do it, then don't send her there in the first place. Honestly. It's embarrassing.
Well, she's simpletons. And also endorsement seekers, because that's how you make money in this country. If you want to get a Nike deal or if you want to be lionized by the media, you just run America down. Or you make a spectacle of yourself. Show no class the way that Gwen Berry did. But she could do it. Does she should she be removed? Dan Crenshaw's wrong. She should not be removed from the Olympic team. If she's got the goods to compete at that level, fine by me. You want to make a spectacle of yourself? You want to embarrass yourself? You're not embarrassing the country. You're embarrassing yourself. Go ahead. Embarrass yourself. Make a fool of yourself. Go ahead. That's what a free country is about. You have the right to make a fool of yourself. Do it, and we'll discuss it. The whole, you know, Jen Psaki with the, you know, she has a right to do this. Yeah, I know she has a right to do that. It's not the question. Of course it's not the question, because they're disingenuous hacks. Gerard Baker in the Wall Street Journal had a good point on this. What kind of enduring appeal must a country have? What kind of values must it convey to the world that it can so easily supersede the strenuous efforts of its own people to defame it? Exactly. If she was representing most of the countries in the world, you think that would go unpunished? I'm talking about by the government. Of course not. In this country, I'm not on board with celebrating, obviously, like the D.C. press corps will do and all of those institutions run by fellow Marxists will do. But do it. If you want to, you know, culturally self-immolate, you're allowed to do that. You're going to behave like an ass? Go ahead. You earned your right to be on that podium, and you can choose to conduct yourself however you want. And it will set an example one way or the other. Same way with you know, the Castro-loving Kaepernick. But, and yet to Baker's point, and yet despite all of that silliness that you see that is amplified by the press corps, we are constantly talking about issues at the border. Why? Because millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people the world over want to come here. What does that say about America? It says something about America that Gwen Berry cannot trump. That Colin Kaepernick will not discard. America can overcome Gwen Berry and Colin Kaepernick and the rest of these classless, thoughtless goofs who happen to be very good at a particular sport. Don't make a big deal about it. And you know what? Don't make a big deal about football. Football wants to go
gay.
Wants to go cultural suicide. Mostly. Yeah. I mean, well, that's what it is. Football is gay. It's nothing to be sorry about. That's what they're saying. That's how they're branding themselves. They're protecting the shield by saying football is gay and transgender and all that. Okay. Then you make a choice if you want your son to participate in that sport. You know, it's what Tarantino said on Bill Maher over the weekend that we played yesterday. Ideology trumps everything for these individuals. And you either stand and fight or you just cede more territory to them. Ideology trumps merit. Ideology trumps creativity. Ideology trumps art. These were Tarantino's words. I don't think he's exactly a raging conservative. He's just seeing what's happening in the industry in which he operates. And you have to be blind not to see it happening, willfully blind to not seeing it happen in every industry, in every crevice of American society. So now that you see it, or you're pretending not to see it, then we'll just dismiss you as a conscientious objector to the culture war. Now that you are otherwise seeing it, then you just make a choice. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for taking my call. I think I may have a simple solution to shut Miss Berry up. Let her pay her own bills. We don't need any donors. We don't certainly need our taxpayer money. I've been to Tokyo. That's not the cheapest place in the world to live for 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call. You know, the U.S. Olympic organization picks up the cost for the athletes. You know, I wouldn't do any. Just leave her alone. Why not?
I've been to the Olympics, and if somebody, are you kidding me?
Why not take the position?
If somebody does what she did during the Olympic trials on a world stage, on an Olympic stage, doesn't happen.
I'm sorry. It not only does happen, it has happened. In 1968 in Mexico City with Tommy Smith and John Carlos holding up the Black Power sign. So what's new? There's nothing new in this world. It's just the history we don't know or we're forgetting. Were we able to overcome Tommy Smith and John Carlos? Kind of. That was, you know, we've been on this continuum since then, actually since before then. But I mean, why not just take the position? And I mean, state it clearly. Put it out there. Gwen Berry, if you want to behave that way, go ahead. Good luck at the games.
I wonder if anybody's going to even talk to her.
Do not go the way of the ban things I don't like crowd. That's the left. That's why I don't like the ban critical race theory in the classroom. Why? Defeat it. Oh, what do you got, Gwen? You activists say you got a T-shirt. I saw you got a T-shirt.
Let's hear from her.
Yeah. Let's hear.
What is your point of contention? What do you want?
I want to hear her deep thinking, presented. All this research and reflection that she's done. Verbalize it. Let's hear it. What do you got? Put the hammer down and let's come have a conversation about systemic racism in America, according to you. I'm not afraid of anything. We shouldn't be afraid of anything. Say your piece. That's what America is. Speak your piece. Better say what you got to say. You're fortunate enough to do an Olympic podium. Go ahead. And, you know, and Phil Knight will give you a contract and you'll be rich and there you go. And then you can be one of these dilettantes like Colin Kaepernick and all of these white woke monsters in suburban America. What a life.
And people keep forgetting that Colin Kaepernick is not talented enough to be in the NFL. And they gave him a tryout and he didn't even show up. Went in a different location.
Joe in Naperville.
Yeah, I can never understand why these marginalized groups want to treat it like everybody else, but to demand that we treat them so special. And also with the male versus female and transgender, why don't we just make this simpler than people are trying to make? Either you compete in an XX or an XY group. You go to the bathroom in an XX or an XY group. Take male, female out of it. That's fine. Prove to me that you're XY. Prove to me you're XX. Then you can use the bathroom of your choice or compete in where you want to compete.
Right,
make this simple, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The D.C. press corps allowed itself to be duped by one man on COVID-19. And so you immediately think,
Tony Fauci.
But that's not who Arthur Bloom is talking about. Arthur Bloom is the editor of the American Conservative Online. He and he joins us now. Arthur, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, glad to be here.
The one man that you reference in your piece is not Tony Fauci, but it's a name that has started to circulate after some of those FOIAs requesting emails were presented and the communications between Fauci and others were provided. We learn about a gentleman named Peter Daszak from EcoHealth Alliance.
That's right. And to be clear, he seems to have known Fauci quite well. And one of the two people who approved the money going to the Wuhan lab through EcoHealth, it had to be Fauci or one other person. So I think it's fair to assume that they've had a working relationship for some time. So this guy, Peter Daszak, he's the head of the EcoHealth Alliance, which is an NGO that's worked on gain-of-function research for quite some time, mostly funded by the U.S. government, though we're now finding out that they were funded in part by Google's charitable arm. So, the joke that I make about this is if Peter Daszak wasn't a real person, Alex Jones would invent him. he's, you know, got fingers in all these different pies. He's involved in manipulating the media. And the thing that happened last week, the big new development, was that he was removed from the Lancet's commission to investigate the World Health or the Wuhan lab. And that's the second commission that this guy was actually put on. The first one was the one by the World Health Organization itself. So he was put on that one. As far as I know, he's still on that one. Then he was also put on this Lancet Commission, which is operating under the authority of the United Nations. And he was just removed or fired himself from that one. So this is a little bit like having, after the oil spill in the Gulf or something, putting the Exxon CEO on the commission to investigate how this oil spill happened.
Or Captain, Captain Hazelwood himself. Peter Daszak, though, this is a guy who was in those emails, and he was the guy who emailed Tony Fauci early on thanking him for dismissing the idea that the origin of the virus was the lab.
That's right. I think you can fairly say at this point, nobody is more responsible for the suppression of the lab leak theory than this guy. And he's a guy who's very, very conflicted. So right at the beginning, we now found out he was involved in organizing a letter in the Lancet by, I think the number is 27 scientists, saying that this is misinformation, the lab leak is misinformation. That letter he didn't actually sign. So you've got all of these prestigious scientists that say, dismiss the lab leak theory. And then he's, you know, clearly pushing back and is praising Anthony Fauci for pushing back and calling it misinformation as well. So those two data points are sufficient for Google and Facebook to begin suppressing and censoring anybody who really brings it up. And so that's pretty key. It's hard to overstate that. There are other ways he's involved, too. In 2020, Trump clearly had more information than we did about some of this stuff, and he canceled the grant to the Wuhan lab through EcoHealth. And what's sort of most galling about that is that right after that happened, there emerged a couple of stories saying Trump is defunding COVID research. He's making it harder for us to get a cure. And NPR and 60 Minutes both did stories about, you know, how Trump is making it harder for us to get a cure. He's ending public funding to vaccines. Of course, that wasn't the case at all. Or you know, maybe it's the case, but, you know, if this lab is implicated in the outbreak itself, clearly the obvious thing you have to do is shut it down. And so 60 Minutes and NPR both interviewed Dajak to basically say this, to say that Trump is cutting funding to us. It's just the most incredible kind of lack of context and lack of kind of the remotest skepticism for any guy in a white lab coat.
How did you get, like, follow the trail of Dajak?
Nobody is more heavily quoted in news stories about COVID by the New York Times or by some of these prestige outlets than this guy. And I've been looking into kind of the origins, finding every bit of information that I can. And it was pretty clear from the beginning that this guy was very deeply involved. And I guess one of the big things that kind of broke the seal on this was Steve Hilton's reporting in Fox. I think he was the first one to really throw it out there that the U.S. government has funded this research that's very likely implicated in the outbreak.
Well, just to provide more material for a Peter Schweitzer book on Peter Dajak at some point, the story out, Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners, which is the investment firm founded by, well, it's an offshoot of Rosemont Capital, which is the investment fund founded by one Hunter Biden and John Kerry's stepson, was a lead financial backer of MetaBiota, which is a pandemic tracking and response firm that partnered with Peter Dajak's EcoHealth Alliance, as well as the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So now you have Hunter Biden's Chinese, you know, Chi-Com-backed investment fund partnering with a company that is partnering with EcoHealth Alliance as well as the lab.
That's right. I saw that story last night, and I think the cooperation that story refers to is a group called Predict, which does sort of pandemic modeling and things like that. But yeah, that's true too. We still don't have a whole lot of details about what the substance of that cooperation was, but that's something that's out there. And you know, I think the main takeaway from both of these things is that the public health establishment and the political establishment are very deeply implicated in all of this, and that's why they don't want you to talk about the lab leak theory.
Well, what was his cut? I mean, if the government was giving money to EcoHealth and then they passed some of that money on to the lab in Wuhan, do we know what Peter was making off of that?
Well, presumably just his salary from EcoHealth. I don't know off the top of my head what that salary was.
With respect to this larger conversation about the relationship between American public health agencies, NIH, NIAID, and as well as the government generally with communist China for the purposes of research, you know, the argument is always going to be that we're partnering with, we're collaborating in the interests of trying to do better disease virus prediction, as well as developing therapeutics and developing vaccines. And they have some really good scientists, even though they're lorded over by communists. And so it makes sense on balance for us to do it. But it just seems more and more dubious. And there's another story out about Francis Collins, the director of National Institutes of Health, who recently testified that, you know, they have no control over the Wuhan lab despite funding it. And they, and, you know, they all do this, you know, we rely on people to live up to what they say they're going to do in their applications and so on and so forth, which is a little Pollyannish. But we see that Collins entered a memorandum of understanding with a Chinese communist operated Institute of Health there to facilitate cooperation in medical research, expresses hope to further push substantial collaboration between researchers and medical science in the two countries, and so on and so forth. And this, the following year, a 16-person delegation from NIH visited Beijing to meet with Chinese communist counterparts to solidify carrying out the funding of joint research programs. This goes back now more than a decade. And so, you know, nothing happens overnight, particularly with the government. So all of this that's coming out now, of course, it's going to have deep roots because this happens over a period of time. But it's the same players because of the inertia of government and bureaucrats, the same players who've been on this program for a long time. And so all that momentum to go in one direction, now it's being called into question. And it seems to me they're sort of bailing water and they're really relying on this idea. You know, we're scientists. We don't involve ourselves in politics. They have complicated politics there. We have complicated politics here. But we're just focused in our narrow lane of science. And I just think that's a harder and harder position to hold for Fauci and Collins and others here.
No, that's right. And one of the things, the gall of this guy, Daszak, when people were starting to finally talk about the lab leak theory, he put out a tweet naming one of the head scientists down there at the Wuhan lab and saying, gosh, you're slandering her reputation. How dare you? And, you know, it's really not her that he's worried about. It's himself. But you know, the bottom line here is, regardless of whether or not there's a civilian or scientific interest in doing this kind of research, it's indistinguishable from what you would do in a biological weapons program. And so the fact that we're doing this in a communist country, is for national security reasons, seems like it should be just totally out of bounds.
I agree. It's like I said, it's a very difficult position for them to hold, I think, which is why they've never submitted it to public scrutiny. It's been pulled out through emails, and now this is all unraveling. But this is never anything that anybody would make in the form of a public argument, and I think that's telling as well. Arthur Bloom, editor of the American Conservative Online. Arthur, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Take care.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
What you gonna do?
Dan and Amy, Oakland police chief being interviewed. And
this is unbelievable. KNTV, the NBC affiliate in Oakland, they're outside interviewing the police chief about crime. And a suspect comes up and tackles the photographer and tries to steal the $40,000 TV news camera in front of the police chief. And so security's there. They're trying to wrestle them off. Nobody got injured, thank goodness. And then the police chief's security detail pulls guns on them and they run away. They didn't even try to tackle them to take them into custody.
I'm glad no one
they
was
just
arrested.
Shoot. Go away. Is lawlessness, folks.
I
wow.
I have to tell you, I really appreciate those assailants' sense of irony. I think that is some good stuff. By the way, the new argument coming out of the White House is that Republicans are the ones defunding police. You see how they do it?
Oh, I know. This is
everything
crazy.
They are that doesn't work, they try to project onto their political opponents. Cedric Richmond's a former congressman from Louisiana, so he's had a lot of experience doing this in the House. Now he's a domestic policy guy for Biden. Here's what he said this weekend.
In fact, Senator Graham doesn't have a clue. And let's talk about who defunded the police. When we were in Congress last year trying to pass a rescue plan, an emergency relief plan for cities that were cash-strapped and laying off police and firefighters, it was the Republicans who objected to it. And in fact, they didn't get funding until the American Rescue Plan, which our plan allowed state and local governments to replenish their police departments and do the other things that are needed. So, look, Republicans are very good at staying on talking points of who says defund the police. But the truth is, they defunded the police. We funded crime intervention and a whole bunch of other things. So
what a liar.
First of all, the cities were not laying off cops and firefighters. Cops quitting or retiring is not being laid off because by executive or legislative decision. That's not what was happening. Especially now, the cities and states are more flush with cash than they've ever been, well beyond anything they experienced from the pandemic in terms of reduced tax receipts. And just a simple question, Cedric. Who funds local police departments? Federal government?
No.
Right.
Our localities. Localities.
Localities
do.
Fund their local police departments. So the idea, pay no attention to all of their representatives say defund the police, defund Border Patrol. Pay no attention to the rioting in the streets, as well as just the peaceful protests in the streets, the position of Black Lives Matter, the position of the Socialist Spice Girls, the positions of your identitarian mayor du jour in big city America. Pay no attention to any of that. Pay no attention to the Portland special ops unit that resigned. Pay no attention to the efforts of city council members from New York to Seattle to cut police budgets. Pay no attention to any of that. It's conservative Republicans trying to defund police. And they're remarkable. They're just remarkable, aren't they? Aren't the new Marxists?
And back to that Oakland interview where the cameraman was tackled. The premise of that interview was talking about $18 million in defunding of the police. And he gets tackled.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and then they came for Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson made this rather stunning announcement on his show.
But it's not just political protesters the government is spying on. Yesterday, we heard from a whistleblower within the U.S. government who reached out to warn us that the NSA, the National Security Agency, is monitoring our electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take this show off the air. Now, that's a shocking claim, and ordinarily we'd be skeptical of it. It's illegal for the NSA to spy on American citizens. It's a crime. It's not a third world country. Things like that should not happen in America. But unfortunately, they do happen, and in this case, they did happen. The whistleblower, who is in a position to know, repeated back to us information about a story that we are working on that could have only come directly from my texts and emails. There's no other possible source for that information, period. The NSA captured that information without our knowledge and did it for political reasons. The Biden administration is spying on us. We have confirmed that. This morning, we filed a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, asking for all information that the NSA and other agencies have gathered about this show. We did it mostly as a formality. We've also contacted the press office at both NSA and the FBI. We don't expect to hear much back. That's the way that usually goes. Only Congress can force transparency on the intelligence agencies, and they should do that immediately. Spying on opposition journalists is incompatible with democracy. If they are doing it to us, and again, they are definitely doing it to us, they are almost certainly doing it to others. This is scary, and we need to stop it right away.
Well, if James Clapper can get away with lying and Eric Holder can get away with prying, then why should the NSA stop domestic spying?
Oh, you rhymed there.
I did.
Reverend Jackson.
I'm a poet and I...
Didn't know it, but you feature it because they're Longfellows.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad you could take this down to a fifth grade level.
Well, it's the only joke I know.
It's a good...
At least it was a good one.
It's a good one.
Compared to your golf jokes.
My golf jokes are good, but now you're off topic. I mean, it's nothing. It's not a big deal. We just have the NSA trying to take Tucker Carlson off the air. But anyway, let's. How about a golf joke?
Hey, no. Let's stay focused.
You want to stay on topic, or do you want to? Yeah. Okay. For a more discussion on this topic and a few others, I think Michael Knowles is the host of the Michael Knowles Show at the Daily Wire. He's also the author of the recently released book Speechless: Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. Michael, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Great to be with you.
What's your reaction to that Tucker Carlson news there?
I wish I could say I was surprised.
Right.
Because it is a shocking claim that the NSA, for a long time known as no such agency, that's how secretive it was, is coming out and spying on an opposition journalist. And when I say opposition journalist, by the way, we should assume that there's no opposition to the NSA. The NSA is supposed to be nonpartisan. And yet we know that it's not. We know that the intelligence community has served the whims of the liberal establishment. They did it in 2016. They spied on the Trump campaign on behalf of the Obama administration. They appear to be doing it now, if Tucker is to be believed, and I have no reason not to believe what he has to say. This is, as he says, third world country kind of stuff. But it shows you more and more of what we've been seeing, and it's something that I outline, actually, in my book Speechless, that the liberal establishment, it's not just the Democratic Party, and it's not just the administrative government, and it's not just the deep state, as we call it, and it's not just the universities and big tech, and it's all of it. It's every institution that the left has managed to infiltrate and turn to its political ends, all while conservatives have been dithering. We've been twiddling our thumbs, and we have lost effectively all of the practical political power in this country.
But didn't President Obama do the same thing to James Rosens from Fox and then President Trump to Barbara Starr, the CNN Pentagon correspondent?
The question of who did it, you know, is this Barack Obama or is this Donald Trump or is this Joe Biden? I actually think that's sort of secondary. I don't think that Joe Biden is spying on Tucker Carlson right now. I think that it is the administrative agencies. I think it's these unaccountable, headless organizations. The real political power in this country more often rests with faceless bureaucrats than it does with elected politicians.
Well,
even people in.
Yeah. Here's the thing on this. So, it's beyond whether it's partisan or not. It's illegal domestic spying. And so there's a rule of law question that many conservatives have seemed to concede as well. Everything is just forced through a partisan lens rather than, wait a second, what is the law here? You have a NSA, if Tucker Carlson's right, and we know from previous cases this has happened as well. People violate the law in federal government all the time. The IRS scandal, not the current one, the one in Joe Obama administrations one and two. And nobody gets punished. So the rule of law has been suspended. We're in the rule of men territory, which is dangerous enough. And then there's the thing, and it's sort of what you said at the outset. You know, I wish I could say I'm surprised. We hear conservatives say that all the time. I'm not surprised. And that's fine. You may not be surprised at the lengths the left will go to aggrandize their power. But there are implications to that. It's like saying I'm not surprised isn't enough when you have these threats on this magnitude.
Well, you know, the difference between a conservative optimist and conservative pessimist is the conservative pessimist says that it can't get any worse. And the conservative optimist says, oh, yes, they can. And so I'm in the latter category here. And I think your point is absolutely right. You see people flagrantly violating the law. But it brings up an even darker possibility, which is that laws are not made in this country the way that we were told they are on Schoolhouse Rock. You know, I am a bill up on Capitol Hill. That's not really how the practical laws are made in this country. More often than not, they're made by people at the FDA and the various other alphabet agencies and the NSA. I mean, there's a question here of what is real political power. And that actually is the question that I explore in my book, Speechless. You know, yes, we send people to Congress, we send people to the Senate, but really the regulations, the laws, the standards, the taboos, the threats, the intimidation that now Tucker Carlson is facing from the NSA, that I think is what effectively governs the country. And that has been captured entirely by the left.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I mean, I'm fond of saying, you know, you start from the wrong premises, you get the wrong conclusions. And so let's get the premises right. And you write this: conservatives have failed to thwart political correctness because they mistake it for a campaign of censorship against free speech rather than a contest between two competing standards of speech and behavior. So expound on that. You seem to be suggesting we're starting from the wrong premise, so we're making the wrong arguments, and thus we're getting the wrong outcomes.
Exactly. This is actually a great example, I think, of the disparity between how where we think power lies and where power actually lies in the country. Well, it's the same thing on this issue of political correctness, which we've been fighting against for 30 years now, and yet we always seem to lose ground. We never seem to gain any ground. And I think it's because conservatives have fallen for a trap. You know, we like to pretend now that cancel culture is something new. Cancel culture is not exactly new. It's just very different than it used to be. In the 1950s, you would be canceled for being a communist. Today, you can be canceled for not being a communist.
Right.
So you can still be canceled, but the standard has very much changed. And I think we actually have a lot to learn from the left on this point, which is, you know, from the very beginning of this country, and frankly, in all regimes, some speech is permitted and some speech is not permitted. We have very broad free speech protections in this country, but things like threats, fraud, obscenity, direct fighting words, sedition, those things have always been off limits. And, you know, in some ways now we have less free speech. In some ways now I suppose we can say more things. You know, I can go on television and say every naughty word that George Carlin told me not to say, but I'm not allowed to say that a man is not a woman. that actually could get me to lose my job or be punished in schools or other sorts of consequences. So I think we need to begin by offering a substantive vision of politics. You know, free speech in the abstract doesn't mean anything for people who have nothing to say.
Well, where did political correctness come from?
So political correctness is I think it's the strongest term for this scourge. We now call it wokeness also, cancel culture. But it, you know, Donald Trump in 2016 said that political correctness is the greatest threat in this country. And yet it goes back not just to the 90s or the 80s. Some people think it goes back to the 60s. I think it goes back further still. I think it begins at the very least in the 1920s. And I think it takes its lead from a line from Karl Marx. You know, we blame Karl Marx for a lot of terrible things, but frankly, the man was responsible for a lot of terrible things. And he famously called for the ruthless criticism of all that exists. And his ideological heirs took this lead and formulated it into something called critical theory. Now we talk about the derivation of that critical race theory. You see this rise up during the New Left. That this call to debunk, deconstruct, tear down the statues, that is what I think political correctness is after, a total destruction of the traditional standards. And because nature abhors a vacuum, when those standards are abandoned, the standards of the left will come into their place. And at the moment, the only two ways that conservatives react to political correctness are either the squishes going along with it or the more stalwart conservatives who basically get rid of standards altogether. But either way, that is going to advance the left's premise by upending our traditional culture.
Right. I mean, going back to the 22, it's not just Marx, but it's also the Frankfurt School like Marcuse. But you know, here's the thing. I mean, just to fast forward in the modern context, you know, I was thinking about this when I was looking at your book, too. I mean, I remember I think it was my senior year of college, undergrad. So this is the mid 90s. Number one bestseller, Politically Correct Holiday Stories by James Finn Garner, which was a parody on political correctness. Number one bestseller. That's 25 years ago plus, and you know, but people are just waking up to all of this cancel culture, woke, whatever term you want to use. I use new Marxism, but they're just way. But this is, you know, it was being parodied 25 years ago, so there had to be something that had taken hold in order to have a successful parody that James Finn Garner had, and I just see. What Shelby Steele refers to as the culture of deference that has so crippled conservatives. We defer, defer, defer. We're going to not take up this fight so that we can prepare to not take up the next one.
I think that's a great description, a very sad one, but a true one. The line I hear so often from conservatives on these semantic battles, you know, right now I suppose my problem was the pronouns. Can I call a man he or do I have to call him she? And so many conservatives will say, oh, who cares? Yeah. Oh, it's just pronouns. Who cares? Well, my answer to that is the left cares. The left obviously is investing a lot of time and energy and money. Perhaps they care for a reason, and maybe we should care too.
Yeah, no, precisely. And so, I mean, I guess the question is then, so for those who do want to engage and take up these battles and go to a school board meeting and take on the school board over the critical race theory curriculum or what have you, I mean, what do you say to them? What is the way back to make, is there a way back to cultural restoration? And if there is, what does it look like?
The parents who are showing up to these school board meetings to complain about critical race theory are maybe the sole thing that is giving me hope that we can possibly fight back against this. And you've had so many Republican and conservative leaders just derelict their duty. But the parents are coming out and they're saying, no, forget about all your kooky theories and forget about, you know, the Republicans' priorities of just moving on to the next tax cut and ignoring basically every substantive issue. We are not going to allow this poison into our schools. We ought to have a say in our kids' education. This is parents who recognize that we need to be able to wield political power on the rare occasions that the people give it to us. And they're doing that. There's nothing illegitimate about that. I know many Republicans think that it is somehow unjust ever to use political power. But it absolutely is not. We need to be willing to do that. I know. I think conservatives basically just don't want to do anything. So when they are in political office, but that is how we've ceded the culture to the left now for decades and decades. And I think Republicans need to remember that courage is not just a virtue, but it's actually the prerequisite of all of the other virtues.
C.S.
And
Lewis.
If we cannot say some things are true and others false, some right and others wrong, then we simply can't govern ourselves.
See, this is the point. I think that it's a good one you make about conservatives being uncomfortable wielding political power, but it's because I think that so many conservatives, self-identified conservatives, are not in the business of truth. So many have ceded the importance of truth to the importance of money. In other words, capitalism, free markets, is a religion to conservatives today because it's easier. It's easier to get more people on board. You don't have to take on the water you take on for any of these sort of cultural, moral fights. And so capitalism is my church. And so it's about money. It's not about faith. So it's about the temporal. It's not about the eternal.
I think you are 100% right about that. But the irony, of course, is that just even in their cynical, practical calculation, these economics first Republicans are just simply wrong. Nobody wakes up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night thinking about marginal tax rates. I like a tax cut as much as the next guy. Nobody wakes up screaming because of occupational licensing reform. These economic matters, which are important in their place, they follow from the broader cultural issues. That is what motivates people. These parents of all sorts of races, of all sorts of backgrounds, are showing up to their school board not to protest over regulation. They're showing up because their kids are being fed poison about sex and race in their schools. And so I think if Republicans would dig in a little bit on these issues, they'd actually probably have more electoral success as well. And they would have the side effect of actually accomplishing something important.
He is Michael Knowles. He's a host of the Michael Knowles Show at the Daily Wire, dailywire.com. Also, pick up his new book, Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds, which we were discussing. Michael, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the book.
So great to be with you, bud. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Dan and Amy, it's time for our weekly discussion about Illinois and all things policy and politics related. Ted Dabrowski, president of wirepoints.org, joins us. Ted.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Ted, did you hear the latest, Ted?
Which one is this one?
With Governor Pritzker yesterday walking out during his press conference with a mask on.
With a mask.
His staff. And basically, I think spreading fear about the Delta.
Around the world and here in Illinois, this virus is very much present, infecting people, hospitalizing some, and tragically killing others every day. Already, the Delta variant that sent Israel back into mitigation is a growing presence in Illinois. We expect it to dominate our cases statewide by the fall. The lessons here at home and across the world are a harbinger of what could happen here.
Spreading fear says that, you know, there's 80 cases, but 70 of the Delta variant are in Chicago, and not one of those persons is hospitalized. But I think that he's trying to scare parents to getting them vaccinated to help President Biden with his, you know, July 4th deadline of 70% of Americans vaccinated. What do you think?
Well, I think he's showing leadership is what he'll say. You know, he's showing the people of Illinois how to move forward. I think it's horrible. I'm looking at the statistics now. You know, at WirePoints, we publish the daily data every day. And, you know, you can see
here.
That cases have collapsed to there's less than 400 cases now, 200 cases, 270. Wow. You know, deaths have collapsed to the single digits. Hospitalizations have collapsed. Everything's collapsed, and what's up are we have 89% of those over the age of 65 vaccinated. So, you know, we're taking care of the people that need to be taken care of. I think he's fear-mongering, and it continues. It's sadly, it's just a misinformation platform that I think we're seeing on finances, on COVID, on crime. It's the same thing over and over again.
The Center for Economic and Policy Research put out a new paper on the impact of the lockdowns on in education, employment, and training. Their so-called NEET scores, N-E-E-T, not in education, employment, or training. The NEET rate for all 20 to 24-year-olds increased from 14.7% to 18.3% between last year and this year. For black young people, the percentage grew from 20.9 to 24.8. For Hispanics, it went from 16.2 to 19.7. So you're talking about basically one quarter of black young people, 20 to 24, one fifth of black Latino people, 20 to 24, who are not in education, employment, or training. That is not a good situation for Illinois or America.
No, it's horrible. But, Dan, you know, I don't know how much of that is COVID-related or not, but, you know, these statistics, especially for the blacks in Chicago, we had 50% of those, I think it was under the age of 24, you know, those 16 to 24, 50% were not in school or working. And so you can only imagine that COVID has just made that significantly worse. But that was our situation before we had the craziness. And now with the lockdowns, the shutdowns, you know who's lost out most. It's the minorities and those who have the least opportunity.
That's exactly. And that's exactly what that paper finds. But it's just another thing, too. And it's not even a question of, oh, we were sacrificing the young for the old and they can recover. There was no sacrificing anybody for anybody. It's the balancing. So the vulnerable with respect to sequestration and or vaccination versus the less vulnerable, which we've known for a long time. You make, sort of a textured protocol for how you address the virus based on vulnerability, but we still are resistant to do that. Talk about something that's resistant, talking about something that mutates. We're still resistant, and that is mutating here as we stand in nearing July 4th, more than, you know, almost, and we're frankly almost a year and a half later.
Yeah, I do think this time around, as you guys mentioned before the break, I think the battle's going to heat up. I'm seeing a lot of activity about people, you know, ticked off about the masks. They don't want masks at all, and it's going to have to be quite a push by the government to make that happen. I think the pushback's going to be huge. I just as something that I think parents should do, I FOIA'd New Trier High School, which is where my son goes to school. I FOIA'd for how many of the teachers and administrators had been vaccinated, and nicely they gave me back a FOIA. 89% of them are vaccinated, wow. And you know, we still have a couple months before we start school, so you know, they can get that number higher. They're protected. You know, we don't need masks. The adults are protected outside at home. We don't need masks.
Wow.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah, but the teachers here at C2, they, you know, first they demanded one shot, and then, you know, we'll go back after one shot. Then they demanded two shots, or we'll go back after two shots. Then they demanded our kids get vaccinated before they go back. And I heard from a teacher from Lane Tech on Sunday who told me, Amy, we are not going back to 5 days a week, and we're doing remote learning in the fall. And she's also gotten in with the union. So she was preparing me very sternly with the facts. And I mean, I don't think parents are going to take it again this time around. And I think that we're going to have to do something, don't you?
They won't take it. And I think you're already seeing the breakdown on the left versus left. And, you know, you're seeing that in the crime right now, how they're fighting between the two sides of how to handle criminals. You're going to see the same thing in education because it won't hold up. And I think there's enough newspapers and New York Times and others who will shun that. So I think we're in good shape. But that means we have to continue to message. We have to continue to do the FOIAs to find out the truth, get the information out. We have to be repetitive because the other side's repetitive as we can see. And with Pritzker coming out with a mask, you know, that's him using his bully pulpit to send out his message of what he wants to do.
Well, wow. that's virtue signaling to the union, saying, I've got you, man, because they're not going back without masks. Are you kidding me? We're never going to unmask our kids at CPS.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with what you said, Ted, about FOIAing and getting the truth out there. But in terms of what Chicago public school parents will take, they'll take it. They'll take anything. They will take anything the union says. There should be no confusion about what Chicago public school parents will take. They will take anything.
Dan, I agree with you. I think the leadership's going to have to come from the suburbs, where, you know, the fights will be had, and then hopefully that spills over to CPS, because we've seen that the parents in Chicago have taken basically everything and have refused to fight so far.
Your colleague there at WirePoints, Mark Lennon, had a good write up about actually just how much money is sloshing around just Illinois as we're trying to get a handle on all of the funny money that was printed and all of the places that it has been distributed. And we're not talking about $13 billion or so. We're talking about $138 billion in Illinois.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, the whole thing has been, you know, the federal government's handing out money, and the state government got whatever it is, $8 billion. Total state and local, there's another, you know, 13-something. So there's a lot of money flowing around, but there was a good piece by Fitch. No, this is a good piece. I shouldn't say that. There's a piece by Fitch praising Illinois for improving its finances and, you know, getting the economy back under control, and Pritzker and legislature did the right things on the budget. And within that, they had something about this COVID tracker. And so we went into that, and luckily this group, bipartisan group, tracks how much money is going all over the country for which of the you know, rescue plans, to what groups. And when you add up what went to the private sector and the public sector, and you're talking about all the stimulus checks and all that, it totals over $130 billion. It's a phenomenal amount, and it's no wonder that Illinois was able to recover its income, you know, state income taxes, sales taxes. There's so much money sloshing around that Illinois had to do better. It's surprising we didn't do even better than that, though.
According to the BEA, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, personal income in Illinois for the state's most recently reported quarter ending in March is 17% over pre-pandemic highs. 17% over pre-pandemic highs, personal income in Illinois. So, you know, you were in banking before you decided to go on this quixotic adventure of trying to improve public policy in Illinois.
And God bless you for doing it.
And I mean, so how does that end, Illinois being a microcosm for the country?
Well, yeah, first of all, you have no idea what the markets are right now. Nobody knows what incomes really are, what the economy really looks like. Bunch of funny money. We're going to have to pay it back at some point. Is it going to be through inflation? Is it going to be through a crash, stagflation? We have no idea because we've never, ever done anything like this before in our, you know, in our world where we print trillions of dollars and then see what happens. With a whole bunch of people in D.C. saying it doesn't matter. We can print money as much as we want. We're okay. We don't know how it ends. We've seen how a lot of countries end up after they make messes, but not the U.S.
I mean, that's just a, you know, just for emphasis, you're talking about like median household income in Illinois, round number, 60 grand, up 17%. Yeah, everybody just got like 15, everybody making 60 got 15 grand basically over the last year.
Tax-free.
I mean, it's just that you think you can live in that world without consequence in addition to more than replenishing the coffers of every state and local government in the country. You think you can just do that without consequence? Then why don't we just do that, you know, in perpetuity?
Every year.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of them want to say they think we can. They're calling it basic income. We just keep handing this money out. This is a precursor to what basic income looks like. Let's just give money to people. And, you know, anybody who has any sense knows how impractical and foolhardy that is.
Inflation, a crash, all of the above. Boy,
it's coming. It's already here.
Find an enclave.
Gas is going to be $5 a gallon soon.
I need to get to the Isle of Man before it's full up, I think. Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, wirepoints.org. Ted, thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us, I should say, on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, just following our conversation with Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints, a buddy of mine who's a medium-sized business owner-operator. Mm-hmm. The ramifications of all this free money playing havoc with the white-collar labor market, too. People are used to not having to pay for things like gas, parking, transportation, daycare, lunch, etc. Now they're going back to the office as an additional $1,000 a month or whatever that they haven't been spending for the past year. It's a total blank show. Everyone wants a 20% raise. It's nuts. And you've got big public tech companies offering crazy money because of fake stock market gains with a working for home deal forever. Mm-hmm. He says
it's going to destroy the downtowns, not only of Chicago, but every big city.
Well, it's more than that. It's how industry operates. He talks about his business. We're dealing with it as it also weeds out, the ne'er-do-wells, but it's nuts. And the ones who are used to drinking from home starting at 2 p.m. are upset when they're asked to go back to the office.
Nobody wants to pay for parking, yeah. No.
Well, right. It's sort of, yeah, the trade. Oh, here we go again.
To take the train. I don't want to take the train.
The trade-offs between the office setting and the home setting and the relationship with the employer and the productivity and the relationship with employees. I mean, it's all of these are multivariate equations, and we fool ourselves when we listen to these politicians pretend to speak with moral certitude about the one thing you should consider, and this is the only thing, the choice, and this is the only choice. And, you know, then you have to operate in the real world and you realize it's a little bit more complicated than some of these fairy tale tellers are offering.
Are you going to our Welcome Back barbecue on July 14th? Because people are now coming back to the office. That's the restart date.
I've been here. So when they throw me a welcome back party for the last year.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We played and discussed this gentleman's comments a couple weeks ago when a video that memorialized them went viral. Ty Smith addressing a school board down in central Illinois, Ty Smith from Decatur, saying this to his local school board about their curriculum and critical race theory aspect of it.
When you talk about critical race theory, which is pretty much going to be teaching kids how to hate each other, how to dislike each other, that's pretty much all can say is pretty much what it's going to all come down to. You're going to deliberately teach kids, this white kid right here got it better than you because he white? You're going to purposely tell a white kid, oh, the black people are all down and suppressed. How do I have two medical degrees if I'm sitting here oppressed? How do I get, first of all, right, time up, because I only got 5 minutes now, 5 minutes. Two medical degrees, no mom, no dad in the house, worked my way through college, sat there and hustled my butt off to get through college. You going to tell me somebody that looked like all y'all white folks kept me from doing that? Are you serious? Not one white person ever came to me and said, well, son, you're never going to be able to get nowhere because you know the black people. But guess what? What's sickening about this whole thing is what y'all doing right now is already something I do in my community right now to speak out against stuff because black folks are getting told by other black folks, oh, you know you ain't going to be able to do nothing out there in the world because them white folks ain't going to let you get no, oh, you know you're not going to be able to do it here because you know, the white man going to keep you down. Well, how did I get where I am right now if some white man kept me down? How am I now directing over folks that look just like you guys in this room right now? How? What kept me down? What oppressed me? I worked for myself from off the streets to where I am right now. You gonna sit here and tell me this lie of critical race theory?
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Ty Smith, who's a conservative radio host from Bloomington, Illinois. Station down there, Cities 92.9, also runs a YouTube channel named Modern Renaissance Man. He's a community leader in the region. Ty, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
It's 92.9. Scott Robbins still do the morning show there? Yeah.
That, I'm not sure. I only come in on Saturday.
How do you know that?
I think he does, because I've been on a show, you know, back in the day when I was a political hack, before I was a guy spinning records up here in Chicago.
That's right, you're a shock jock.
How was your offering, dare I say diatribe, but I enjoyed it. How was that received? We heard the clapping by the audience. How was it received by the school board? What is the school board you addressed doing in response to what you said?
Well, I think because of in light of how everything just pretty much unfolded, that once the video went viral, they actually canceled the next three school board meetings.
Oh,
we won't actually be meeting again until possibly when school is actually starting in August.
Are you kidding? They're that afraid of you?
I think they're afraid of actually what it caused. I think they're afraid of the fact that a lot of parents actually stood up
right. And
started, like, you know, especially when now it has gone, like, pretty much global. And we've been seeing across the country videos and different segments of people, parents coming right to the school board meetings already, you know, ready to go and pretty much say, we don't want this in our schools. And it's so amazing that they all of a sudden are saying, well, it's not being taught yet. We're not teaching it yet. Oh, no, don't even try it. The fact that you were even trying to implement it, you know what I mean? It's like the fact that you guys are even thinking about it or even it, to put it into the schools, that already, I don't care. So, like, for instance, in, like, physical therapy, once we get a patient well, we do something called, like, a maintenance program or restorative program, or we do something called preventative medicine. That means we don't want you to come to therapy. We don't want to have to treat you. We want you to be well. So when it comes to this whole narrative that they're trying to push possibly into these school systems, no, we're trying to prevent that from getting in there. We don't even want this in their system. We don't even want them even thinking about it. What they need to be thinking about is coming there, being educated in the basic things they need for life when it comes to math, English, writing. But why do you want to teach them? Nobody could explain to me why they want to teach them this. Well, some folks will say things to me like, well, it's to bring awareness. Well, a child does not know what awareness means. So if you go in there, right, there's kids that still, I mean, hopefully there's not no children listening right now, but can you think about what people told you about Santa Claus? You believed that as a kid. You really believed that as a kid. And they even put in certain type of emotions. And there's TV programs that make you actually believe that he actually does exist. So if you sit there and teach kids about this whole theory and make them believe and think that because of their skin color, this is the reason why they're possibly where they're at, then these kids would actually go out and they implement those behaviors, not knowing, you know, they don't know that's true. They don't even know what a theory means. They're going to take it all in as if it's factual.
Well, what's the curriculum then for the fall if they've canceled the school board meetings leading up to August?
Well, we don't know yet because it hasn't been so-called released. They don't want to let us know what it is, but we do have another sickening bill that's at our governor's desk with this. I think it's like called Bill 0818, where they're pretty much showing kids soft porn.
Yeah. So the reach
well, tell me, what's that?
The Reach Act. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the
no,
question.
No, the Reach Act. No, that's right, in terms of the sexualization of children. So you have, I'm going from memory here from your remarks. You have two boys in the school district in question?
One of my sons is not, but my other son, he's 17 years old. He's going to be attending that very school. And
What school are we talking about?
This is called Bloomington High.
Bloomington. Oh, yeah. Okay, Bloomington High School. Okay.
District 87.
Yeah, okay. And so, what has his experience been like during the pandemic as well? So the combination of COVID and critical race theory, what's his experience been like? What are your conversations with him?
There actually, because of how my sons were raised, there really is no conversation on that because they don't see that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My sons never had a conversation in my house about color. There was no reason to. You know what I mean? There was no reason to talk about white people or Asian people or black people. There was just no reason to. So my sons grew up their whole entire life just seeing other people as people. I never had to teach them about people. They know that, hey, as far as my house goes, we treat everybody right. But that was not a talk of, hey, we treat white people right. I never had to discuss that. So that's why it's so crazy to me, because the way I raised them is just that, we treat everybody with respect. We love everybody. We treat everybody like we want to be treated. But there was no way I didn't have to sit there and differentiate between what type of people you treat this way. It was just all people, including their teachers, including people at church, whatever. So as they grew up and this type of curriculum is being pressed forward, they're sitting there looking confused, like, why do they want to focus on people's color or anything like that? They're confused, like, what's the reasoning? Why?
The thing I like about your remarks, the angle that you took, this is very much like Bob Woodson often argues, is you basically said, you're telling me I can't do anything without you? Well, that's the most racist position of all. I can't do anything without the white man, or more importantly, the white pea hat wearing woman who driving so much of this. I can't do anything without you. Well, how did I do everything I did? And exactly. How are my kids going to do everything that they're going to do? And how have black people accomplished so much in this country in much more oppressive times than 2021 America? But the whole thing of putting it back on the purveyors of this that are supposed to be your chaperones through life and telling them to back off, get out of my life. I didn't ask you here. I don't need you. Take a walk.
Right. See, that's what I'm saying. That's the type of, when I mentor kids, that what you just said right there, that's the type of attitude and outlook that I want them to have on this. I don't focus on their current condition. I don't focus on what their mom did. I don't focus on if they don't have their dad in their life. All I focus on is, tell me what it is that you want to do. And when they tell me, well, hey, I'll show you guys how we can get there. I don't even tell them, hey, it's going to be hard. It's going to take hard work, because that can already be a discouraging thing for kids anyway. You tell a kid something's going to be hard, they instantly kind of get a little scared. They become fearful. But I don't do that. I tell them, you're going to do it. This is how we're going to do it. And you ought to see the look in these kids' eyes. You ought to see you can just see this encouragement, like this feeling of I can do anything that comes upon these kids, when all I'm doing is just keep on telling them what they can do. And anytime somebody tries to come in and, shake that up by saying, well, I don't know, because no, we're not going to do that. What we're going to do, we're going to keep on telling them what they can do. And we have helped, me and my wife, we have helped so many kids get into college. We've helped so many single parents, sign their children up for FAFSA. They don't even know about this. Sign them up for FAFSA, sign them up for grants. And these kids have gone into school, and they've seen that this same exact thing that was possibly taught in school, even they're trying to implement it, well, it's definitely being taught in colleges, that they're saying, man, Mr. Ty, you're right. Nobody kept me from getting into college. Nobody kept me from getting my degree. And then when I apply for my job, I teach kids how to go in for an interview with confidence and answer the questions right. I say, because, you want to go in there and you want to show them, I'm going to get this job. I'm going to show them how much I'm going to show them how much I'm going to be qualified for this job. And all of them go to these places and they end up getting the jobs that they want. And it's crazy, because they'll come back to me and they're, I can't believe all this time I was scared that there was some force or some, white system out there that was going to keep me from doing what I'm doing. So, and when they realize that, it blows their mind.
No, I appreciate that. And so do you think it's going to be men like you and women like your wife, black men and women in this country, that have to lead the way? Because, frankly, look, we may believe the same things, but I'm just an off-the-rack white guy. Nobody's going to listen to me. Black conservatives, or whether you identify as conservative or not, you just have the attitude that you have. That's who is, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your disposition, going to have to lead the way to a better place in America.
Yes, sir. Actually, that's something that Donald Trump said whenever we got invited to the White House in October at the Blexit Movement. He pretty much said right now you have an opportunity amongst black. You have an opportunity like no other time in history before. You know, he didn't say pretty much like that. He just said since like the Civil Rights Movement. Right now, black people have a chance to actually do something extraordinary. He's saying that can go either that can go good, it can go bad. Right now, blacks can help blacks get out of the predicaments that they're in. But then there's also blacks that want to sit there and exploit the situation and still play the games off of people's emotions, saying, no, this is what's happening to us. Our people are down. We're just so down. Look what's happening to us. Look what they've done to our ancestors. We're still suffering. And by getting the applause of the people take that in as if that's factually true. You know what I mean? They make it take, you know, they just play off of people's emotions like a lot of ministers do. They just play off of people's emotions, make you feel good about what they say. Yeah, he said some good stuff right there. Ooh, he said some good stuff. We got to stand up. We got to rise up. And then years down the road, y'all are still there. So what did all that talking do? Getting people aroused and getting people pumped up about, oh, look how we're suffering, look what, and you're still there. So what good did that do to get people pumped up like that? It did nothing. Versus on the other side, I'm going there saying, look, if you want to go and do something with your life and be better, I crossed over that wall. I've been there. On the other side, it's beautiful. There's all kind of life over there. There's all kind of people of different colors, all kinds of different people of different backgrounds, but we have to get over that wall. And if you got people that are staring at me and don't want to go over that wall, just like in therapy, if there's no progress in therapy, we have to discharge the patient. If we're working with patients for a long time and patients keep on giving us excuses why they're not trying to get better, even though we know they have the potential to get better, we can lose our license if we keep that patient on and show no progress. We have to show that they are progressing. And if a person comes along with me and I'm mentoring them and all I keep on getting is excuses why they can't do it when I know they have the ability to do it, then I have to discharge them. I gotta work with the ones that actually are trying to really do something with their lives. I've done this for too long. I'm not going to sit there and, you know, patty cake your emotions and all that. I'm going to give it to you real like a father. The way that I treat these kids that I mentor, I do the same exact way with my sons. And my sons know I don't play around. I don't mess around. I don't want no excuses because I've been there. And I know this is radio. I talk about this stuff openly. The things the kids try to tell me that they might be facing, I'm not nothing special, but I face it. I faced molestation before. You know, I faced being called out of my name. I faced being poor. I faced being not having no food. I faced our lights being turned out. I faced being having to go and beg our neighbors for some sugar or for a pack of ramen noodles or for some hot dogs or something like that. But so I'm like, no, you're not going to give me that. No. Do you want to go or do you not want to go? That's all I'm going to ask you. Don't give. All I want to know is yes or no. If you, well, you don't. Okay. We're done. Okay. I'm moving on to the next kid.
Ty, where did you guys want to go?
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
We lived a little bit in Chicago, and then we moved down to what we call Baby Chicago, which is Decatur.
Baby Chicago. I haven't heard that about Decatur. But yeah,
Oh, my God.
It's pretty good. That's pretty good. You moved down there to work at ADM or what? No, not
work at, yeah, because ADM is that's the only job that's there besides the hospital. Exactly. No, but no, I grew up there as a kid, man. We had we seen some of the same type of stuff that was going on in Chicago. We seen the same type of stuff in Decatur, and that's why some of the things they cut out that video. That was a 6-minute long video. Then there was actually an additional 3 minutes after that video where I addressed the crowd, and that part is not played. I've seen so many people get murdered, man. One of my first murders that I seen was a woman left inside a garage. She was split from her neck all the way down to her pubic area and pulled open because she swallowed something that were, you know, in the drug world, it's called an 8-ball. She swallowed an 8-ball, and the guy, the crackhead, he got it out of her. Yeah. That was one of the first murders that I've ever seen, you know, as a kid. So, I mean, that's why, man, I said to pull myself through all that, to go through college, to go through the tutoring, people just have no idea, man. I mean, I was on a scholarship from doing track, and I would go to school at 7 o'clock in the morning. I would get done. I was 21 credit hours too, and I would get done at 12 o'clock, 12:30. Then we had track practice at 1 from 1 to 3, and then I would go and work at a furniture store from 4:30 to 11 or 11:30. I would go home if my wife wasn't asleep. She was up with my son. If she wanted to get to sleep, I would hold my son, rock him to sleep while studying in my books. I would put him to bed, go back to studying books to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to repeat that process. You know, so I that's why to me I'm like, and it was doable. And I tell it is not that it was hard. It was just time consuming. It wasn't hard. It was just time consuming. That's it. And it's not going to last always. You going through college and you doing something better with yourself, yeah, it might be time-consuming. You can't do what you want to, but it's only for that time. But once you graduate and get the career that you want, man, life becomes awesome and grand. And that's why I love giving back, because I'm letting them see you guys have a future. You can do this. I'm not going to tell you that you can't. I'm going to keep on telling you that you can, and this is how we do it.
Well, Ty, I love, by the way, I love the therapy metaphor for this whole discussion of race and culture, too. I think it's really apt. The only thing I would say is, you know, just try and up your energy a little bit.
Oh, yeah, right.
Could you just be...
we need a little more crescendo.
A little bit more enthusiasm for life, Ty. That's my only criticism. Conservative radio host from Bloomington, Illinois, station Cities 92.9. You can catch him there on Saturdays. You just heard 92.9.
Yeah,
92.9 Cities.
Saturdays from 3 to 5.
From 3 to 5. YouTube channel. Named Modern Renaissance Man, Modern Renaissance Man, Ty Smith on YouTube, community leader Ty Smith. Ty, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to hearing more from you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Rumor Scottie Pippen, he used to play for the Bulls when Chicago had an NBA team. This is back in the 90s, 80s and 90s. So Scottie Pippen is now in retirement, Hall of Famer, of course. He's an entrepreneur. He's got a new bourbon out. I think he has a tea. He's a candy bar. He has a fruit snack. I don't know. He's got a bourbon. He's doing all kinds of things, including.
I don't think he has a fruit snack.
No, I don't think he does either.
Or a tea, but yes, the bourbon. New bourbon. It's a new thing. It's a new tequila now. Everybody's doing it.
He also took time to talk to Dan Patrick, former ESPN anchor Dan Patrick, on his program. And this was following up in an interview he gave to GQ, where he made some disparaging comments about Last Dance, the documentary on the Jordan Bulls, and how he was portrayed there. And one of the key events in Scottie Pippen's career, for Bulls fans, of course, they know, Game 3 of the 94 playoffs versus the Knicks, 1.8 seconds left, and Scottie Pippen benched himself. Well, what happened there? He was sick. No, he wasn't. Scottie Pippen recounting that to Dan Patrick.
You refused to go back in the game, and Phil set up the play for Tony Kukoc.
Well, I mean, it's not much to be said. If you go back and look at when Scottie Pippen entered the Bulls and when Tony Kukoc entered the Bulls, and who deserved the last shot of the game.
No, I understand that, Scotty. I'm just going by what you said. You said you need to read between the fine lines, and then you go on to say it was a racial move to give him, Tony Kukoc, a rise.
So, well, I mean, if you knew that Scottie Pippen had been with the Bulls from 87, battled through the Pistons, and every other team that we had to get to those three championships, wouldn't you give Scottie Pippen one opportunity to get a last-second shot without Michael Jordan? Like, 1 year without Michael Jordan. Can I get one shot? Like, I'm doing all the dirty work.
But all of that I understand from the basketball standpoint. But when you say a racial move...
Well, why would Tony, who was a rookie, get the last-second shot and you put me out of bounds? That's what I mean, racial. Like, that was Scottie Pippen's team.
But
Scottie
Phil
Pippen
then,
was but, on pace to be an MVP that year, right? Person.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why would you put him in a position not to be successful? Why wouldn't you put him in a position to succeed? Michael Jordan is not there. So who's next in line for you?
But have you talked to Phil about this? Because by saying a racial move, then you're calling Phil a racist.
I don't got a problem with that.
Do you think Phil was or is?
And he said yes and a cutout. But yes, so Phil Jackson is a racist because he designed to play for Tony Kukoc in Game 3 of the 94 playoffs against the Knicks rather than for Scottie Pippen to take the last shot. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Pippen went on to say, he's not angry. It's, you know, by God, this is all water under the bridge. But
for clarification purposes. I mean, as a coach, you put in the hottest player gets the ball always. And if somebody else was hot that day besides Tony Kukoc, who happened to be black, that's not racist. That's just being judicious as a coach and deciding who's going to get the winning shot. And shame on him. Phil Jackson was wonderful to him. And who's Scottie Pippen talking about himself in the third person? Well, Scottie Pippen has been... Stop.
Well, that's just a lot of athletes do that. Right, well, Jackson is allowed to do that because Bo knows football and Bo knows baseball.
I think he owes Phil Jackson an apology. And I hate to say that because I
have no use for Phil Jackson. And I don't really have any use for Scottie
Pippen.
He's the Zen
master.
So, yeah, that's all nonsense marketing. But so it's a tough call because I have no use for either one of them. So you just judge it on the merits, and the merits suggest that Scottie Pippen is now trying to recast the 1.8 seconds that has dogged him the rest of his career and now into retirement, and cast himself as some sort of victim or some sort of a racial justice warrior because he stood up for himself, said, if I don't get the last shot with Michael gone, then you're a racist. Boy,
that's not a good teammate, and that pisses me off.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's tough to be a racist and coach in the NBA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. You're
right. I think it's tough to get away with being a racist in the NBA.
You think so? Why do you think that, Dan? No, expound on that. Please, no. Please, go on.
Is that not obvious? I mean, it's laughable. Patrick, tried to soft pedal it with Scotty, but he got it out of him. He thinks Phil Jackson's a racist.
I mean, double down on it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And Pippen went on to say, well, how's he, he's a racist. He wrote this book about Kobe, and then he went and coached Kobe, and it was less than complimentary in some respects to Kobe. And Dan Patrick's like, well, that may be like disloyal, but is that really racist? I mean, and I'm not even agreeing with Phil Jackson's evaluation of Kobe, but can you not evaluate a player in terms of his basketball ability without being a racist if you're a white guy evaluating a black player?
Mm-mm-mm.
I mean, Pippen is,
it's a bit of a stretch.
So listen to this. Listen to this one. This is good.
Okay, it gets better.
So Dan Patrick goes at him, well, the Jordan era, obviously you want the ball in Jordan's hands. Well, what about the play for Steve Kerr, who hit the game winner in game 6 against the Jazz in 97 to give them the championship? Listen to how Pippen characterizes how that play went down.
Yeah, and look, that's why I wanted to have you on. But I go back and Phil designed a play for Steve Kerr when Mike was there. And Mike didn't have a problem with that, did he?
I don't understand. You're not setting me up to answer the right question. What do you mean Phil set up a play for Steve Kerr? He didn't set that play for Steve Kerr. He set that play for Michael Jordan.
I thought in the huddle, Mike says, I'm going to throw you the ball. You'll be open at the foul line. And Phil had nothing to do with that?
And you don't want to get this show started because it'll take us a long time. Do you know all those cameras that's sitting in that huddle who they was working for?
The NBA.
So you know who Michael was speaking to when he said that, right? That was planned. That was speaking to the camera. That wasn't speaking out of what we're going to have to do, what the play is going to be. That was speaking to the camera. Had John Stockton not came down, trust me. But that was building his own documentary because he knew he was controlling the cameras.
What?
You understand English?
Yeah.
Okay. So all those cameras that was working were working basically for Michael Jordan, not for the Chicago Bulls.
But
they were building the Come Fly With Me, the Air Jordan videos. That's what it was. That was not naturally spoken.
Okay. All right.
That was rehearsed.
I understand what it's like to be second fiddle, on this show. To a star,
yeah,
everybody focuses on you, and I do the dirty work like Scottie Pippen did, and I don't get the accolades.
And I'm your Tony Kukoc.
And I don't get to take the last shot and all that. I know what that's like, so I can understand, Scottie Pippen was a great player in his own right, and he wants that recognition. He feels like he's been slighted. But I think he's not handling it the best way he could.
No,
And the Steve Kerr, I mean, it sounds certainly plausible. Ball's in Michael's hands. If Stockton comes down to double team Michael, then you give it up to Steve Kerr for the 3-pointer, yeah, which is what happened. But the idea that in that moment there's this posturing because Michael's thinking about something like The Last Dance 20 years later speaking to the cameras so that he was cool with Steve Kerr taking the last shot.
No, that wasn't even a thing back then.
That seems to be a bit of a stretch. And by the way, if you think that that this is not about Pippen, you know, feeling slighted, feeling like he has been unfairly diminished because he's in the shadow of Michael Jordan, and I don't think he particularly likes Michael Jordan that much either. Listen to this when Dan Patrick asks him about Michael Jordan's decision to leave to play baseball.
What did you think when he said he was going to go play baseball?
I didn't really think about it. I was really focused on my own craft at that time. But I thought
it was a big decision, though.
Yeah, it was a big decision, but it's a selfish decision. But it was kind of who Michael Jordan was, and that was a guy that kind of believed that he can do anything on his own.
I don't think that's actually an accurate characterization of Michael Jordan, which is why he was so involved in the supporting cast for all those championships and putting together the right team, because he couldn't do it on his own. Obviously, nobody can do it there on their own, one person, even in the NBA, even in this era where there's no defense. But the way that Pippen characterized Jordan, you know, in the context of the baseball decision, not basketball, but it speaks to his opinion of Jordan generally, I think informs those other two clips you heard of him talking about the Steve Kerr shot in 97 in Game 6 and the Tony Kukoc where he sat out the 1.8 seconds. Really interesting, though. Interesting sort of reveal by Scottie Pippen in that interview, I think. Bard in West Lafayette.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I was just thinking, if Phil Jackson was truly a racist, why would he get Michael Jordan the ball?
Well, right. I mean, thanks for the call, Bart. I mean, Michael Jordan, Shaq, and when he went to L.A., Kobe, obviously. As I said, I just think it's difficult to survive in the NBA if you say, I'm not going to give you the last shot. I'm not designing a play for you to take the last shot because you're black. And I got a white guy over here who can take the last shot. I mean, come on. And I wasn't a particularly big Tony Kukoc fan either. I think it was a little soft. But, you know, there are other things
still, it depends on day two, who's hot, who's not.
Who's,
I think that plays
maybe
into it.
Maybe matchups, what you expect the other team to do in terms of the defense they roll out. I mean, there's all sorts of variables. But it's just interesting. Pippen takes this as a personal slight. And then he uses race as a cover for what he feels is a personal slight. And that's sad. Tom Sudeikis at Barrington.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi, Amy. You are awesome. Absolutely fantastic. Beautiful, great voice. Oh, hi. Hey, Dan. And anyway, this whole thing is...
See what I'm talking about?
This is just...
See? There's a genderization. There's a gender overtone in Tom Sudeikis's call and his comment. And
what he's trying to say is he likes me better, Dan.
Yeah. You know, Amy doesn't do this show alone, Tom.
I'm just recognizing your second position.
I know.
Credits for that.
I know. I know. Yeah, I'm out here doing the dirty work, Tom.
Well, listen, hopefully I can call the show when I go to the re-education camps. But what I wanted to say is racism is the rabbit, and now it's doggy pile on the rabbit, and everybody trying to get their 10 minutes of glory, fame, or try and extract some cash from it. Good luck, Pippen.
Thanks.
Anyway, you guys, have a great day.
Nice to call. You know, he's trying to sell bourbon, so he's got to play the race card, I guess, somehow. I'm playing the race card in the NBA. If we're not talking about Donald Sterling, the former owner of the LA Clippers, playing it against Phil Jackson, the Bulls and the Lakers and the championships, and Jordan and Kobe and Shaq, that is a triple bank shot there, Scotty. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, Dan, Mamie, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Listen, I didn't realize all this about Scottie Pippen. Man, he took and exposed himself as being a non-team player there and an idiot. Because, listen, Kukoc made that shot. That's a team sport. They won the game. There's no spilt milk there to cry over him. Pippen might not have even made the shot. I mean, they made the call. He made it. And all his comments about Jordan and everything, what the heck's right? You're exactly right, man. He's got some kind of bug in his butt about Michael Jordan, for sure.
Thanks, yeah. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it. Jerry in St. John.
Hey, Dan, Amy, this is Jerry. Yeah, you know, nobody ever complained about Tiger Woods controlling the camera, you know, in the PGA. I mean, he was the best golfer. He got camera control because
right.
people wanted to see him. It wasn't racist. Nobody ever complained about racism.
Right.
I just think Scotty's just being a big crybaby.
Yeah, that's about right. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, you have the tallies from yesterday's golf outing?
Okay, and just take it like a man, all right? The AM tee time winner, score of 51.
Well, that's AM.
Tracy Kahn,
oh, yeah.
Ron Ellers, Bob Kiley, Jason Kiley.
So Tracy Kahn, the Joe Cotton 4 team.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. PM tee time winners. Score of 58.
59. Come on.
James Cethna, Scott Enschler, who I do believe got the hole-in-one on the 17th. Darius Cetha and Jason Cook. Long drive.
See, you know what? You know, well, first of all, I let my team down, so I apologize to the Dwight Country Club Mafia. We had 59. So second year in a row, we lost by a stroke. And again, I want to know, just so I can show what integrity our team had.
Oh, yes, dear.
Whether or not they got the eagle on 16 because they got the long drive guy, which we did not get because he had gone in because of weather by then. And we just played it out. We took our birdie.
Oh, you know what? That's... Maybe you have a do-over.
Yeah, but no, do-over. No.
Closest to the line is Zach Ullman, which is really Amy Jacobson. I'm sorry. He beat
Signature
me by that
bank.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
Weighted blanket guy. That's right. He gave me weighted
Okay,
blanket.
Scottie Pippen, sour grapes.
Longest drive for the women goes to Miriam McParland, who I was golfing with. She nailed that shot.
Yeah.
And for the men, it's Mike Hepananaunig.
It's well said, I'm sure.
Hepananiounik.
Yeah. That was
Hepananaunik.
That was a bomb. That was a bomb because I hit my drive pretty good on 11,
uh-huh.
And he was like 20 yards in front of me.
Yeah.
That was a bomb.
All right.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.